Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have in the studio with me today Representative Dan McKay on the right.
Hello, everyone.
And on the political left, sitting in for Jim DeBacchus, is June Hyatt with the Salt Lake County Democratic Party. Welcome, June.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you in the studio. And let's go for it. Let's go for it, guys.
Okay.
Let's start with
I was going to propose we talked about sports today, but I guess we'll talk about politics.
We can do that.
Oh, are you going to get some in?
Let's do it. But let's start with Judge Brett Kavanaugh. I spent a good share of my time this week listening to the confirmation hearings. I'm not sure why. I found it quite interesting. I was so, if you start with the beginning, it was so interesting to see the organized protests and the lack of decorum. And it must have been pretty crazy for, is it Senator Grassley who was conducting it?
Mm-hmm.
June, let's go to you first. I mean, this was obviously organized by the Democratic Party to try to make their voice be heard.
Sure. I think that the Constitution says the president gets to pick a nominee, but says nothing about Congress approving it. And they're following process, right? They're going through the procedure. I think the protests are great. I'm a big fan of protesting and not as much decorum myself. So I think that when you can disrupt the system, I think it's great.
So you liked what you saw.
Yeah, I'm excited to see people standing up and not just taking decorum and the way we usually do things as the lay of the land. You know, let's shake it up.
Dan, I want to hear your commentary on, you know, protesters being escorted out by police, but just in general, have you been listening to the hearings? Did you take any interest in it?
I tried in the first day,
okay,
as the senators all congratulated themselves for being in the hearing and having a microphone. I was proud of them for being in the hearing and having a microphone, and they used the entire first day to talk about themselves and to talk about, you know, their political grandstanding.
Yeah.
So,
well, I was going to say the second day is the one that is the most interesting, because then you get into the Federalist Papers and there's a lot of jurisprudence being talked about. And I just, as someone who's not trained in that, I thought there was a lot to learn.
Yeah. And anybody who is interested civically in, you know, how the law works and how, you know, judges and, you know, the first three articles of the Constitution and how they interrelate with the appointment process. It was really, really interesting.
And it makes you proud of a country like ours that has such incredible founding documents and, you know, corrections on power, you know, protections for us. I don't know. I'm hopeful that it's all going to work in the end.
The funny thing is, if you haven't had a chance to, it's kind of running around on social media, but Senator Ben Sasse made a comment, or really a long speech, it was like 16 minutes, just about how, you know, the division that's gone on with this appointment process, or candidly with any of them over the last 30 years, he says, is really a symptom of the problems that we're having in the country, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think that during the Obama administration, I'm pretty sure a senator said very similar words. And now, you know, on the other side, we have the Republican side that's kind of critical of problems that are going on. It didn't this kind of division, at least as far as Supreme Court appointments, it wasn't as dramatic 30 years ago as it is today. You know, with Judge Robert Bork, it was kind of when we started this whole drama. And for some people, I don't know, I'm kind of a nerd this way. I love the Supreme Court nomination process. It's super interesting. And if you don't love it, I totally get it. That means you're
a
productive
citizen.
But for you,
you're a nerd.
But I'm a nerd. I follow it. It's interesting.
June, your reaction to what Dan's saying and the whole confirmation.
I think that the Supreme Court is a really powerful tool. I agree that we have great checks and balances in this nation. And it used to be that no one cared about the Supreme Court. No one paid attention. It was not a policy-changing body, right? Then the Supreme Court has looked at for massive cases that have changed the course of American history, American culture, rights, privileges of people. And I think it's become a very political body. And so it's important to pay attention to who's being appointed to that. And that's, I think, where the division comes in, is you have a president who's saying, I'm going to appoint a judge who's going to take away these rights that have been granted by the Supreme Court. That's scary for people who are protected by those.
You know, that there's always this saying that, you know, what caused World War II? And they always say, well, if you want to know what caused World War II, you got to go to World War I.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this looms large for me, because you have to go back. You can do a few of them, but let's go to Merrick Garland. And some of what we're seeing today is because of what happened there.
Right. Sure.
Right? And
it's hard to mention the grandstanding that goes on around the Supreme Court nomination stuff without thinking about Merrick Garland. But everyone should know he is not the first, and I doubt he'll be the last.
I remember when Bork you know, had
was
some
the
things.
Same way.
I was working as an intern back then.
What was the lady who was the White House counsel in President Bush's administration?
Oh, yeah.
She was nominated and didn't make it either.
That's
so,
right.
So, I mean, it is. This is a recurring thing.
I was there then.
Throughout our country. Yeah. Sorry. I was hoping you would know since you worked in the
I should. I can picture her.
You know, people want to politicize one element or another, and I recognize Merrick Garland is a specific sore point because it's so close. But what we have to keep our eye on is, are we allowing the judges to pick up the role that it belongs in the legislature and belongs in the executive branch? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that because of failure of the legislature to legislate, and regardless of the administration, because they fail to legislate, the courts are left to be the battleground. And that, in my opinion, is the problem of what's going on, is we're all looking to the referee to solve our problems instead of letting the players play the game. And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah. Hey, before we leave this topic, Kavanaugh's going to get confirmed, right? You guys both agree on that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm still hopeful.
Make the case for why he wouldn't be.
I think that there's a lot of pushback. These documents haven't been released. We haven't been able to do proper research. He's been very flippant in the past and saying things that are pretty inappropriate for someone who's supposed to be in a very powerful neutral seat. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of pushback. I don't think it's as set in stone as we're.
Would you say they're any more controversial than the things that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said about the president? Because I don't think they're any different. I look at what, you know, justice. Just because you become a justice does not mean you get to be a non-human, a non-citizen, not participating in the country, right?
Well, I think Justice Ginsburg is in a position as a person to have an opinion, and she has gone on record apologizing for saying things. But as a justice, she has been very clear, very to the law. She has not gone in saying, I'm going to vote a certain way because of my beliefs. We know that she holds to the letter of the law. I don't necessarily know that we could say that about Kavanaugh.
But court watchers, sorry, this is the
this
little
is left
geek
and right.
In me.
You guys go.
Court watchers, I'll just be the rational middle. At the end of the day, no, I'm serious about
they
this.
They all like to claim the
I
middle.
I,
you all like to claim the middle.
Those who are court watchers from a scientific, you know, it's almost a science. Mm-hmm. We can almost divide the court into
absolutely
red shirts and blue shirts,
100%.
Right? We know exactly where they're at. Mm-hmm. We know when the issue's coming up. We know where they're going to be. So the pretense that it's not going to be there is shocking to me.
Yeah.
I just don't think anything that Justice Kavanaugh has said is any more shocking than anyone else has said. And I think I think we have to stop dehumanizing and taking away citizenry rights from being a justice. That said, Kavanaugh gets confirmed. This thing's done.
Yeah, but are we going to make that argument if it was Barack Obama appointing Judge Garland? Right? So that comes out
everybody
when it works in the favor
right
of the party
debate.
Who says, I want this guy in, even though he's making these claims.
Well,
let's look to Justice Ginsburg. But she has years and years of being a very neutral voice on the bench.
Oh. May I just say, I love your points. May I just say, as someone who doesn't know this as well as you do, I have been impressed by how smart these people are. The intelligence level, and I don't mean just Kavanaugh, but even watching our senators drill him. I've heard a senator from California. I didn't know her. It wasn't Feinstein. And just some incredible, you know, people who think about our country's well-being.
Yeah.
Harriet Myers. Does that sound right?
Am
I getting it right?
That's right. That was the White House counsel who turned down her nomination.
George W. Mm-hmm. Bush's nominee. And I want the listening audience to know I did not pull out my phone. It just kind of came into my brain.
She did not. It came straight.
But
from
I will
brain.
Say, while everybody's when they're on the opposite side of a nomination, they're super in favor of protesters. When it's on the other side, the protesters are children. And that's, you know, and that kind of decorum or lack of decorum is always looked upon by whoever the judge is making it. So
I wanted to transition to Colin Kaepernick, but we don't have time. So just in the time we have remaining, I will tell you, I did have some one-on-one time with Harriet Myers in the White House when I served there. One-on-one might be a little bit extreme, but I got to watch her in action on a mercury regulation that we were promulgating at EPA, and she was a force to be reckoned with. I'm just saying that.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love it. I love it when they're strong legal minds.
Well, and it's just fun that these people, you know, it is touchable. We do get to interact with them sometimes. So, hey, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by June Hyatt and Representative Dan McKay. In our next segment, we will talk about Colin Kaepernick, and we got some other great things. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the local programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
And June Hyatt on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We mentioned in the first segment that we were going to talk about Colin Kaepernick. Everyone told me I called him Colin. Maybe that says something about what I think
belongs,
about this guy.
Honestly, it belongs in our series of interesting commentary when we talk about sports.
Well, okay, so I just have to say this. I'm, you know, I think he's out there looking for relevance and to make money. And so when Nike has this ad saying, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything, that just isn't exactly Colin Kaepernick to me. So that's from the political middle. You guys, let's hear what you think.
I think that it is interesting that Nike is making profit off of Colin's activism.
Totally opportunistic on their part. And
I do not love activism turned capitalism. However, I will say, burning something you already own is ridiculous. You own a
don't
pair of shoes.
Don't burn your Nike gear.
You don't want them. Give them away to one of those homeless veterans you care a lot about. Right? Don't burn your stuff. You already own it.
Dan, was I too hard on Colin Kaepernick?
No, I think I have a different take on this than like my typical righty friends. And so I might get in a little bit of trouble with this.
We like it.
I don't have a problem. And we've talked about this before in the show. As soon as you start squelching somebody's ability to speak their mind, whatever it might be, you know, people would have silenced Dr. Martin Luther King. They would have if they could have. And they did. They eventually did. Yep. They would have silenced Malcolm X. If you go down all the social changes, the things that have changed our society, and I will argue, you know, what are we, 60 years past President King's death? Dr. Martin Luther King. So if we look back 60 years and the change, now we look back and it's a no-brainer. Now, I'm not saying Colin Kaepernick belongs with Dr. Martin Luther King, but I think you can look at his ability to say something and his and the reasons he's saying them, he feels very sincerely. And we shouldn't honestly, I don't think we should marginalize those thoughts. Now, putting it in a Nike ad and making that whole deal, I actually went and watched the Nike conversation. And, you know, a lot of people see Colin Kaepernick as this anti-police thing, which, you know, maybe that's part of it. But I think more he's just trying to draw attention to the fact that there are people in this country who don't and aren't treated like equals. And I think as much as we have people that aren't treated like equals, we ought to try and remedy that situation regardless of gender, sexual orientation, or whatever it may be. I think you go down all those lists, and history does not look well on anybody who tries to marginalize somebody for who they claim to be. Now, if they want to step up and have, you know, some terrible opinion that we ought to be killing somebody or taking somebody's property or whatever, that's a step too far. That's not America. But protecting their ability to say those things, even if we don't like them.
Yeah.
And many of the people who in this country who have died for this country, and many people who've suffered loss, be it some kind of, you know, they got from PTSD all the way to having lost a body part or even their lives. They have died or sacrificed for the ability for that person to say something that's really inconvenient because they really believe it. And then it becomes our decision as to how we react to it.
Yeah.
And I look at some of those reactions and I got to be honest, I think it's a little sophomoric and I think it's lost. So
yeah.
That's my 2-bit rant without a.
Dan McKay, one of the good guys.
Let's do another.
No, don't tell people that.
Let's do another kind of juxtaposition here. I guess there was a New York Times published an anonymous op-ed, very unusual. Someone who claims to be in the White House but part of the resistance. You also have the Bob Woodward book, Fear, that isn't out yet, but some of the chapters have been made public, and I guess it's already a best-selling book on Amazon, even though it's not released yet. And then you have Jason Chaffetz releasing a book called The Deep State, How an Army of Bureaucrats Protected Barack Obama and is Working to Destroy the Trump Agenda. It's such an interesting time.
But so, nobody's surprised, right?
Yeah, nobody's surprised.
Okay, so raise your hand if you've been to Washington, D.C. within the last year.
I'm raising mine.
Okay. If you've never done this, anybody listening to the show, go. So it's just me and Natalie, which now I feel terrible. So if in the last 20 years you've been, no, I'm just kidding. So if you walk around D.C. Okay. And every building as you walk the mall that isn't a Smithsonian is an office building. And inside that office building, there are people who are running the government. One way or the other, their job is pushing some button, signing some paper, moving
thousands
some form.
Thousands and thousands.
In fact, you know, this whole op-ed, and it's highlighted in the Woodward thing, that there are people within the administration that want to change or thwart or do whatever within the administration. And it was interesting. The New York Times called the person a senior member of the White House staff, which literally people don't even think about this. Senior sounds official. Ooh, I could be talking to the vice president. You're not. That could literally describe hundreds of people that are, quote, senior members of the administration. Yeah. So all I will say is there may be a point to what former Congressman Chaffetz is saying. There is a massive bureaucracy in D.C. And I guess now we want to bring part of it to Ogden. Yeah. So
June, you might
issue.
Know the saying that the Russian czar said. He said, you know, I don't run Russia. 10,000 clerks do.
Right.
Anyway, your reaction to Chaffetz's book in the deep state.
I just, you know, I think it's a fascinating title, how an army of bureaucrats protected Barack Obama and is working to destroy the Trump agenda. How short our memories are. It's fascinating to see Jason Chaffetz coming out. He's got a book deal. He's making a lot of money on Fox. I doubt he's saying anything original. But I look at all of this and I just think, you know, I mean, he's not my favorite.
Can I just say, as someone who was a political appointee in Washington.
A senior member of the White House.
There you go. Well, of an agency. But I definitely became very familiar with the terms, you know, career service and political appointee.
Oh, yeah.
And we would have meetings that were politicals only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we'd come back. I'd supervise the staff, so I'd go to the political only meeting, and then I'd come back and report to them. And I was always uncomfortable with the separation. But there is no question that the career service workforce run that town.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do it no matter who's president. And,
that's right.
But
they're protected.
There is something called the Senior Executive Service, SES, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they are the heart and soul of the federal government. And these people do not politicize the agencies. They serve our country in such an honorable way. And
yeah. So I mean, that's the role of the administrator.
The notion that there's a deep state, I'm just sort of like, there are people that are working really hard there. And I'm sure there's some bureaucratic things happening for Republicans and happening for Democrats. But there's a lot of seasoned, incredibly talented people.
All true. But I don't think that makes it binary. In other words, if there's a lot of people and therefore it must be bureaucratic and therefore it must be, you know, some deep state element. I just don't think it's that binary. I think it's so nuanced because I see it in Utah.
Yeah. The saying that they used to say that a bureaucrat is a job held by a Democrat that a Republican wants.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Think about that for a minute.
I will say regarding the op-ed, I think it's interesting that it's taken so long for someone to come out and say that they are working within to prevent the agenda of this president. It's not surprising to me that there would be people who are entrenched in systems who are trying to change them as they unfold. Yeah. That happens all the time.
Sometimes these things are tipping points, too. You get more.
It'll
know,
be fascinating to see the response.
I see. So my only experience is Utah, right? But I know there are state employees who are entrenched in their positions and getting change is extremely glacial.
Oh, absolutely.
And so
and that's Utah.
And that's
imagine
Utah.
Imagine the federal government.
I can only imagine. Yeah, and we have a couple
still
of state buildings.
I haven't been in Washington for over a decade. I still about every other year get a credit card in the mail that comes from my Washington service. They think I need my federal credit card renewed.
Oh, well.
That's weird, isn't it?
Seems like we should shop.
Hey, I want to ask both of you, do you see Chaffetz's book and what he's doing, do you see that as a step of his towards being a governor? Or is this a step of in Utah? Or is that a step of him continuing to have a national profile and that he stays in the media business and never comes back to the Beehive State to run for governor?
I think he's trying to stay on the national spotlight. Utah was not a huge supporter of Trump. We know that Utah was a big third-party candidate state. There's not a lot of people who were on board with Trump, and that may even be worsened as he said things against Utah values. So I don't necessarily
don't think
know that
Chaffetz
saying,
nod.
Look, yeah. I support Trump and the Trump agenda is going to help him, but I certainly do think that he is going to run for governor.
Do
it just
you?
Probably
okay.
wasn't
And
the best
Dan,
move.
How about you? Do you see this as something that would help him in a governor's race, gubernatorial race, or –
there's no such thing as bad press. Sorry, I thought you were going. There's no such thing as bad press.
So you like
it's just add an ID, and at the end of the day, you know, as long as the book, and I'm certain, knowing Jason, He is very thorough at the way he does things. I'm pretty confident that the book will only add value to his stature.
Interesting. Okay, so you guys are both saying that it's likely that he would be in for the governor's race.
Sure.
Our Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox is someone whose name's used a lot.
Okay.
Current speaker, stepping down soon. Greg Hughes.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks he's in. Sometimes you hear Josh Romney, although I think that's unlikely. And then you hear Greg Miller, his name. So
I'm hearing it more and more.
Let's do a quick. And I'm sorry I didn't do any Democrats there, June.
Well,
would
I
you
don't
like
know
to that. Put some down?
Look, I think the best the Democrats can hope. The best the Democrats can hope for is Spencer Cox, and he's a great guy. We, you know, go Spencer.
That's not going to help him.
I was going to say.
Sorry,
June. Be careful. That may not work out well.
Not too many
Spencer.
Good graces for him.
Spencer is a good guy.
Yeah.
I'll just say of that list, you know, if you handicap all of them, the number one thing that keeps predicting election results, money.
Yep. And name ID.
And name ID,
which
right?
Greg Miller will have both.
And I question whether or not Greg's actually to that same name ID as mm-hmm. Jason Chaffetz mm-hmm. and, you know,
yeah,
probably
Gail
higher
is.
Than Greg Hughes. But, yeah, that's right. How much do you get to inherit the good? And if you look
totally.
At John,
yeah.
you know, but he was John Jr.,
yeah.
right? So there was enough in there that was close. It's so fascinating to
Interesting.
Me. I love these races. Don't count out Dan McKay for 2020. I'm just kidding.
Hey, we're seeing the attack ads start to pop out with Mayor Ben McAdams and Representative Mia Love. I want to hear your commentary on both, and then I'll have something to say, Dan.
I'm persistently unimpressed by Mayor McAdams' campaign. I expect a lot more, and thus far he is running a. So somebody anonymously, not anonymously, I won't tell you who they are, but someone who is not political came to me and said, what's going on with Mayor McAdams' ads? I really like him, but, and the but afterwards was most informative to me. They said, you know, these are really cute and they do kind of fit that it's a Utah thing, mm-hmm. but that might work for governor. It might work for county mayor. It might work for the legislature. He said, but nobody here thinks that going back to D.C., is about corralling your kids and having a fun bus and do it. He said nobody thinks that's what DC is. They want to know, can you get back there and beat the crud out of somebody? They want to see a little grit. So Mayor McAdams, I know you listen to the show. Somehow you've got to incorporate and let
some
everybody.
Political advice coming from Dan McKay.
They want to see
a Democratic
some grit.
Candidate.
People want to see grit.
Right. I want to hear what you have to say about the
I think them attacking each other is really fascinating. I don't think it's going to get anyone anywhere. Mia has her own track record of not supporting school lunches, and apparently now she thinks it's terrible that same-sex marriage is legal, which really only bolsters McAdams' campaign. I think that, you know, I would like to see him campaign a little harder. I think he's doing some good work running the county right now, and there's a lot going on with the state homeless coordinating council
right.
and everything going on there.
Let's talk
so
about
he's
those
in a complicated
and
position,
things.
And
yeah.
he does need to bolster that. Running a campaign is hard, especially for Congress. But I think, you know, Love's attack ads can only help win over some moderate votes and some people who might not show.
Did you see the debate commission? I don't know if we're going to talk about that.
Please.
The debate commission released their polling numbers and showed that Ben McAdams had a 37% mm-hmm. and Mia was at 46.
Wow.
So, I mean, that was a 9-point spread. It was a 4-point error on the thing.
Yeah. That's a big spread. I don't have a lot to say about it, but I have actually liked Ben McAdams' ads. So maybe I'm just not. Maybe they're targeting someone of my demographic.
And maybe that's it.
Yeah.
It's just I want my DC ads. I want those guys to be tough.
We need to go to gripes.
Pardon
and Dan, let's go to you first so that June can kind of get the feel how this gripe session works.
Yeah, I have been struggling because I'm not naturally a grouchy person, but Emily
He's
looks
loaded
at
for
me
bear.
Like,
He's
yeah,
loaded for bear. He's got one.
Okay, so I am, as I look back at the way things are going in the country and I look back at the state, I want everyone to like, it feels like we've had no vacation this year. It feels like there's been something every day, every week, and we're all, like, exhausted. I think at the end of this political year, everybody's going to be, like, done, like, baked. Of course, unfortunately, the presidential election will start shortly
after.
Yeah, as I say, January, the presidential election starts. There will be no timeouts. Pretty soon, politics might ruin Christmas, and that's my gripe.
Interestingly enough, on our agenda to talk about this, my gripe is we have to start thinking about permanent solutions. Looking at, I work in housing. We are very short-sighted in everything that we do, whether it's federal, whether it's state level. You know, I just brought up Mayor McAdams' involvement with the State Homeless Coordinating Council and looking at what we're doing to house those populations. Let's start looking at some really creative permanent solutions to these problems. Utahns are known for being industrious. We're known for being creative. Let's get there and let's start looking at long-term gain solutions so that we can have a Christmas and so that we can have some time off, because it would be nice to have a break.
My quick gripe, the sequencing of the inland port, when we do the analysis and when we do the politics, and the politics came first, and I think that's a problem. I'll have more to say about it. Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with June Hyatt and Representative Dan McKay. Our program is produced by Emily Means. Thank you for listening.